Certainly the word of the day is honor. We have assembled to honor the one who loved us so much as we were just singing. The Father who loved us enough to send him to die for us. There is a sense in which we are to honor God all the time, but the Lord's Day is a special day. And to be able to assemble around the Lord's table is a special time for us to honor God. I hope that each one of us will appreciate the fact that we have come together to worship, that our worship is to be sent to God in a sense to honor and respect Him. Today is also a day that we will be honoring our graduating seniors from high school. In fact, we will be honoring all of our high school students in a sense. You may notice that there are books on the stage. Each year we give our graduating seniors a new Bible, and we give a reference book to the 9th, 10th, and 11th graders so that they will have a mini library when they graduate from high school. I think I counted 58 volumes that are here. That means we have 58 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders. About half the congregations of the Lord's people that are meeting today probably have fewer than that, or not many more than that. And you think about 58 young people. We'll be honoring our seniors this morning at the end of the service by presenting the Bible to them. There will be a luncheon today for them and their parents. Tonight at 8 o'clock is the baccalaureate service at the local high school, and I have the honor of bringing the message at that this evening. Tomorrow night at 7 is the graduation exercises, beginning in, they'll be in the Lloyd Auditorium. We are just in the process of honoring our young folks. We're thankful for them, and we're proud of them for who they are and what they are. Also today is a day that we honor our mothers. As I said about God a moment ago, I hope that there is a sense in which we honor our mothers every day of the year. Today is a special day on our calendar, and it is fitting, I believe, that we have some special days to remind us of ways in which we ought to show respect and appreciation and give honor to our parents, particularly today thinking about our mothers. I hope if you have not made contact with your mother, if she is still alive, that you will do that before the day is over. I had the privilege of staying at Dad's and Mother's for the last 3 days. And being with them, and I am so thankful for what they have meant and mean to me, and that they have a reasonable degree of health and can continue in life even today. Those of you who are a part of the local congregation are aware that our elders have designated 1996 as the year of the family. There are special Sundays, one of which we've already had, when we will have special speakers coming in to address the subject. Sammy Jones has already done a great job on the day that he was here, and others are planned. And in addition, it was suggested that we use the first Sunday of each month in the months when we're not having those special efforts to emphasize the family. And because today is Mother's Day, we changed to the second Sunday instead of the first Sunday of May. I want us today for a few minutes to think about the subject of real love. We announced the subject, if that isn't love, and we just sang about the kind of love that Jesus had. And I don't know whether you thought about it or not, but as we were singing that verse that talked about what he was doing on the cross, it came to my mind that he also had concern for his mother while he was on the cross. The song is intended to emphasize the love that he had for us and for our souls, but you will remember at that very same time, in his dying breath almost, he was concerned about who would take care of his mother and looked down and saw her as she was there by the cross. And so I think even as we sang about the love of Christ, that it ties in with the importance of the concepts that are thought about today. One of the best things that we can do to pay respect to our parents and to emphasize our families is to try to have the right relationship between husbands and wives. There is a true sense in which we think about our own mothers today, but I hope there is also a sense in which we as husbands and fathers think about our own wives, the mothers of our own children. If we can understand what this real love is between the husband and wife and emphasize that, we will have solved many problems. And we will have produced a setting where we can find happiness that may be greater than we've ever dreamed. I want you to go with me this morning to the little book, Song of Solomon, or as it is listed in the Bible in many instances, Solomon's Song. You young folks need to realize that this is one of the most beautiful love stories that's ever been written. Particularly when you read it, as I believe it was intended, to see the kind of love that ought to exist between a husband and wife. And you see the things that are said by the wife about her husband to him and back and forth, and then even talking to others about him and what he means. It takes on one of the most beautiful settings that a person can find. It is sad, I think, that sometimes we become so interested in Psalms and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes that we forget this little book of Solomon's Song. But look in the second chapter of Solomon's Song, if you will, and let's look at verses 2 through 4, three verses, and draw 3 points from these today to help us to realize what real love in the family is all about. As the lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. As the apple tree among the trees of wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. In looking first at verse 2, as the lily among the thorns, so is my love among the daughters. One translation translates that, so is my darling among the daughters. And I believe that the idea is that there ought to be that kind of feeling and that there ought to be that kind of love that exists between the husband and the wife. Real love includes the right kind of appeal to the one who is to be the recipient of that love and who is to return that love. And sometimes we drag our feet in this area of thought. It has been suggested that you can watch a couple how they're seated in the car and tell whether or not they're married. If they're seated against the doors, they're married. If they're both under the steering wheel, they're courting. It is also suggested that you can look at a lot of other things and watch and determine whether or not people are married, how they look, how they dress, the care they take of themselves. Isn't it sad that we do so much to try to make ourselves attractive, and some of us need all the help we can get, during the period of time of courtship and maybe a little while after marriage, and then sort of forget that each of us needs to think about those things that appeal to the other and try to dress particularly and have one's appearance particularly in such a way as to appeal? Read the 31st chapter of Proverbs, beginning at verse 10, about the virtuous, courageous woman. And you'll find that she was concerned about herself. She clothed herself in silk and purple. And I rather believe that those words were intended to be used, figuratively speaking, to suggest that here is a woman who was concerned about how she looked, concerned about her appearance. But you read it in the context, and you'll see that she was especially concerned about her relationship with her husband, with her family in general, but with her husband in particular. And seemingly she was concerned about being clean and neat and healthy and having those qualities that were so important for her husband. It is said in Isaiah 61 verse 10 that one ought to be concerned about having the right kind of ornaments. Now I would hasten to point to you, as you are aware, that Timothy 2:9 and 1 Peter 3 both talk about being concerned about not overdoing it and letting our appearance just become the ornaments, and pointing out that there's something that's even more important, that meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. But in that passage in 1 Timothy 2:9, verse 10 says that this is as a woman who is interested in godliness. And verse 9 says in order to do that, she needs to be concerned about her apparel. And I do not believe that we are stretching this point to let that apply in her apparel and her appearance relative to her husband. There is a place for a house coat and curlers, but not at supper time. There may be a place for dirty, worn-out jeans, but not all the time. Most husbands still appreciate being able to look at one's bride and see that beauty that is involved in someone who cares for herself. And it goes in the other direction also. Now, maybe we need to be careful that we don't go to the extremes. I heard a little story the other day about a woman who did not want her husband to ever see her without her having her face on. You know what I mean? And so she would wait until he went to sleep and then go and take her face off and set her alarm clock for 30 minutes before he would awaken and get up and put it back on. And he had never seen her without her having her face on. One night in the middle of the night, he had a nightmare and awakened both of them and sat up in the bed and looked over and said, "Who are you?" Now, we may go to the extremes, but I would suggest to each husband here today that each one of us needs to be concerned about having an appeal for the wife and the wife for the husband. In the second verse, the indication is that in real love, there is attention. And I guess these are sort of twin points. If there is appeal, there will probably be attention. If there's attention, it tends to suggest the idea of preparing oneself to be appealing. This verse says, "I love to sit in his shadow." That suggests the closeness, the protective idea, and some attention being shown. One of the dangers, folks, that we have, and my opinion is that we men have a bigger problem with this than the women, we sometimes allow ourselves to become so involved in other things and pay so much attention to other things that we forget to pay the attention that ought to be paid to one's spouse. Eve was made because Adam needed some attention. He was lonely. And when Eve was made and given to Adam, then she needed his attention. There was the need of attention being given by each in the direction of the other. And that has not changed one bit today. Ephesians 5:33 says that the wife is to reverence her husband, but 1 Peter 3:7 says the husband is to honor his wife. And there's not a lot of difference in those two as far as the general concept is concerned. There is to be honor and there is to be respect going in both directions. If we are not careful, we will allow ourselves to become so involved in other things that we forget some of that attention that is needed. And loneliness can develop today when there is the lack of attention as much as it developed when there was the lack of a spouse in Adam's case. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 through 5, there is a detailed discussion about how the body of each belongs to the other in the husband-wife relationship, and a commandment given, "Defraud ye not one the other." And isn't that saying, don't fail to pay this proper attention to each other in this area of thought? Earlier in those verses, King James Version says, "Render due benevolence." Another version says, "Render due affection." And I like that word. Render due affection. One spouse is due some attention, some affection. Later in 1 Corinthians 7, at verses 33 through 35, where Paul was making the point that it probably was better to remain single at that time because of the persecution, he went ahead to say that a husband is going to be interested in pleasing his wife, and a wife is going to be interested in pleasing her husband. And if you'll look at what he's really saying there, he's saying that the right relationship between a husband and wife ought to be each one of them showing attention to the other and being interested in pleasing the other. It may be with a word. It may be with a gift, maybe a very small gift, but something that says, "I love you. You are still the most important one to me." If you will notice in this text here, it says, as the apple tree among the trees of the world, my beloved stands out. That's the tree I see when I look at the forest. And if each wife would conduct her life in such a way that when her husband looks at all the women, she stands out, and each husband would conduct himself in such a way that when the wife looks at all the men, that he stands out as a tree among the trees. That's what's being suggested here. Now again, we may be able to go to the extremes. I heard a little story the other day that I really liked. Fellow was leaving for work, and just as he went out the door, his wife said, "Do you remember what today is?" And to protect himself, he immediately said, "Yes," and she shut the door. And he thought, "What is today?" Don't believe it's her birthday. Is it her anniversary? And it bugged him all day. So along about 10 or 11 o'clock, he decided, "I better not take a chance. I'll send her some flowers." So he called and had some flowers sent. Still, after lunch, he couldn't think, "What is today? What is? I told her I remembered it. What is it?" So he stopped and got a box of candy on the way home. When he got to the front door, she met him. He handed her the candy and looked, saw the flowers, and she smiled and said, "This is the best Groundhog's Day I've ever had." But you know, I think I'd rather give something on Groundhog's Day than to miss an anniversary or to miss a birthday. Some attention. And then the third verse, and again, I'm not for sure that these three points are not saying the same thing in different ways. Third verse suggests the idea of action. Notice this verse, and it is from this verse that one of our songs is taken that we sing with our young people, especially in Vacation Bible School. "He brought me into the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love." Now, you get the image? Somebody's done something that deserves honor, and we throw a big banquet. We get a nice place, we decorate it, we have the finest of meals. Maybe there'll be a gift or a trophy presented. We invite all the important people, especially important to that person, together, and we have a big celebration. We have a banquet. I believe this one is saying here that the husband-wife relationship in the family ought to just be a continuing banquet. That the honor that is given and the actions that are shown in the direction of each ought to be such that we can just compare the life to a big banquet. "He took me into the banqueting house." And then she says, "Over me was the banner of love." You remember, you've been present on occasions where someone was being honored and there'd be a big banner, maybe over the head table or over the speaker's stand with the person's name or some way recognizing the occasion. And here this image is used in the sense that there ought to be such a real loving relationship between the husband and wife that life is like a banquet with a banner of love over it. Now that's going to take some action and some effort. You don't order a home like that out of Sears catalog. And you don't have anybody else just come and knock at the front door and hand you a home like that. That takes effort. It takes action. To have a family relationship that's like a banquet with a banner of love all the time. As I think of this, I think of that passage that says the husband and the wife are to cleave to each other. That suggests action. And also in Ephesians 5, where in comparison with the love that Christ had for the church, he says the husband is to nourish and to cherish the wife. The word nourish suggests physical needs, and the word cherish suggests emotional needs. And there's a lot involved in that action. 1 Timothy 5:14 and Titus 2:5 would instruct the wife to guide the house and to keep the home. And perhaps even the word house would be better if we said home in that first one. To guide the home, the queen of the home, as we sometimes say. If the wife will work to make that family circle such that it's like a banquet with a banner of love, she won't have to wonder where her husband is. And if a husband will nourish and cherish his wife out of love to see that her needs are met and really be that kind of loving husband to her, he won't have to wonder where the thoughts of his wife are. A banqueting house and a banner of love. What we have just presented is a very, very simple formula for marital happiness. But it will work because it is from the best marriage manual that has ever been written. There is nobody who can write a manual about anything better than the one who created that thing. Now you think about that for a moment. There is nobody who can write an instruction manual about anything better than the one who created that. God created the family, and he wrote the manual and gave the instructions. And here is just a little nutshell model in the Song of Solomon for the way happiness can be: appeal, attention, and action. It'll work. Now let's switch these thoughts back to the song that we sang before the sermon today about the love of Christ and be reminded that the church is his bride. And we immediately then see that in our relationship with Christ, there needs to be appeal, there needs to be attention, and there needs to be action. Christ certainly has given us the appeal and the attention and the action. What about us? Do we try to dress ourselves and act in such a way that we are appealing even to Christ? Do we spend time giving our attention in his direction even first? And what about our actions in his direction? As we think about the need of being Christians, being baptized into Christ, being faithful Christians, being restored when necessary, I believe if we'll think about appeal, attention, and action, we'll understand the relationship, and that ought to cause us, if we're not right with Christ, to do something about it right now, as together we stand and sing.
Softly and tenderly Jesus is calling, calling for you and for me. See on